Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Transportation and Finance and Policy Committee for this Thursday, January 26th. We have a couple of bills on the agenda. Before we get to those, I want to announce that we have a quorum, and we have minutes from our previous meeting. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to move the minutes of January 26th.
The minutes of January 26th are moved. Is there discussion? I'm sorry, 24th. We already have minutes from today. That's amazing.
That's pretty good, yeah.
Back to 24. The future. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed, the motion prevails. So, members, we have a couple of bills on the agenda today. Both are going to be laid over for possible inclusion in a future finance and policy omnibus bill. And really look at this hearing as a way to, understand the issues at hand. We'll have future discussion, although we have set aside a good amount of time for each bill today. So this will be the real main opportunity to ask questions. We'll surface issues, vet issues, and then come back to those later. And I'll have more to say about House File 401 when I present it. But now on the agenda, we have House File 498, Chair Hansen's bill, and I will move that it's House File 498 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus transportation, finance, and policy bill. Representative Hansen, you are always welcome in the Transportation Committee. Please let us know about your bill, and then we'll have some additional testimony and discussion. Welcome.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein and members of the committee. House File 498 was in front of this committee, I believe, 2 years ago in a different form, or with a different number at least, and it is the Highways for Habitat program. Trying to encourage pollinator habitat in our rights-of-ways. In addition, it also has a very popular program, Living Snow Fences, and I'll talk a little bit about that later. So the House File 498 is a bill that was in front of the committee, did move through the committee, I think was into the omnibus bill, had some appropriation for living snow fences, I believe, but just didn't make it across the finish line. So since we've moved these bills or introduced these bills in prior years, there's been some activity at the federal level, I think some grant availability for Highways for Habitat type of programs from the federal government, as there's been a strong realization that our public right-of-ways are an opportunity for habitat. I do have a DE1 amendment to get the bill in the shape I would like if the chair could move that.
And Representative Hansen, I will move the DE1.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, the DE1 provides some definitions. It establishes the program, establishes an account, describes integrated roadside vegetation management. I do want to just note, prior to me being here, I worked at the Minnesota Department of Agriculture and did the pesticide applicator training. Trained MnDOT employees in conjunction with the University of Minnesota, and integrated roadside vegetation management is nothing new. It has been around for over 20 years. We were teaching people about that. There's been, sometimes there's an ebb and flow of interest, but IRVM has been around and has been really kind of the language that is used for managing our rights-of-ways. It talks about developing the management standards, so it's clear what those standards are. It would require a report back to you and members of the committee. And then rather than being quite prescriptive on ditch management, it provides the IRV language. That gives some discretion to the commissioner. And I want to be clear, this applies only to MnDOT rights-of-ways, not other county road authorities. They're encouraged to have IRVM, but it is required for MnDOT rights-of-ways. It talks about pollinator habitat asset management, a management plan, so we can have some look forward on what we're going to be doing. And then it provides a $1 million appropriation from the general fund for the habitat program, a one-time appropriation. We We know we've got a lot of one-time money. This would be good to get the program kick-started. And then for living snow fences, it has a $2 million appropriation one time from the general fund to the Commissioner of Transportation for implementation of living snow fences so we can get those in the ground and have them starting to stop snow and provide habitat. And I think, Chair Hornstein, you have, once we adopt this amendment, you also have an awesome video to show us about living snow fences.
Very good one. Okay, so members, just to review, because I think this is one of the first times we've done this, session, we're just simply going to incorporate this DE1 amendment, and that will be the bill. So this is really just a motion to get a bill in the shape that Chair Hansen would like us to discuss it in. And then we will have, I would anticipate, a fairly robust discussion then of the DE1 after the testimony. So, members, I will move that adoption of the DE1 amendment. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. All those opposed, the motion prevails. So we have House File 498 as amended before us. And so I think per Chair Hansen's last comment, I'll just introduce this short video. You know, as an urban legislator, you know, I was not familiar with living snow fences until Chair Hansen brought this bill up last year. You know, I happened to be just watching the local news a couple months ago, and one of our local TV stations had a segment on living snow fences, and I found it very educational and helpful. So look at this as sort of a living snow fences 101. And I think it's a good way to introduce at least part of the bill that Chair Hansen is presenting. So with that, we'll cue the video.
Caused by climate change. We learned we spend close to $100 million every year to clear snow and ice from Minnesota roads.
Seems like a lot, right? From giant plows and maintenance to de-icing material and labor, all of that adds up. But there is a way to cut down on costs, crashes, and the impact on the environment. I took a drive 90 minutes west of the cities to learn that all it takes is some collaboration from Minnesota landowners across the state. Pass along Highway 212 in Bird Island, Minnesota, and you'll see Vern Prokosh's place.
You put it up there?
Well, not physically. I told somebody what to do.
A hard-to-miss roadside attraction that's popular with parents and their little ones in the back seat.
We have some people that come from Wisconsin that drive by here a couple times a year, and they said that we just wait for the kids, just wait for the smiling barn.
But what those travelers may not know is that there's something else in his yard keeping them safer on the roads.
So this particular highway experiences about 4,300 cars a day. At this particular site here in Vernside, there used to be two big snowdrifts that form on either side of his building site here.
This is a living snow fence, a wall of trees, bushes, grasses, and wildflowers that blocks blowing snow from the highway.
Front ones are plum brush.
Vern at some point was growing corn out here, but here's how it works. The state came in and paid for the land, and then a combination of state and federal dollars paid for all the trees, bushes, shrubs, and flowers that are here now. The state, of course, also now maintains the land.
What the intent is to manage the wind. The amount of snow that gets carried by the wind can be 100 times greater than the amount that just falls from the sky.
Snow fences can look like this or this. From natural elements to rows of unharvested corn to plastic barriers. It all depends on the site, and MnDOT says they work. Here's a look at a stretch of I-94 westbound near Moorhead with snow fencing. MnDOT says the winds were blowing 30 miles an hour on this day. Now, a look at the highway where the snow fencing ends. Look at those drifts on the right shoulder. This video shows 2-foot drifts on that highway without protection. As you can imagine, snow fencing cuts down on crashes.
We find that if we're on a curve, the snow fencing can reduce the crash severity by about 40%.
Of course, MnDOT saves money and resources plowing less, but all of this is also positive for the environment. Living fences like this one sequester carbon and provide great nesting habitat for wildlife. They also cut down on the chemical treatments we use on the roads.
We're trying to reduce our chloride use And chlorides are tied to salt. So the snow fences help keep the road warmer so that the salt's more effective. So you can use less salt that way.
Some snow fencing is on state property, but a lot of it is on private property, a network of nearly 350 landowners across the state. Gullickson says some landowners have reservations about the program because it does require space on their property, but he wants to stress landowners are compensated and they try to be creative to come up with solutions together.
We have found that the public safety and mobility is what really drives landowners to do this, more so than the financial part of it.
They want their roads clear.
They want their roads clear.
Vern says it's made a difference.
We used to get a lot of company from people that got stalled in here, but now we don't have as much company as we used to have.
People knocking on the door needing a push or something.
Right.
His neighbors sure appreciate it.
Our neighbor here thinks it's a great project because he doesn't hardly get any snow in his yard anymore.
Maybe it even helped you on a trip along Highway 212 and you didn't even realize it.
Well, it's doing what we wanted to do.
It's helped to keep cars driving through.
And if you have a problem area near your home, MnDOT says it never hurts to reach out to them. They are looking to collaborate with more landowners, so they'll be able to work with you to see if a snow fence would even be helpful in your area.
Research shows nostalgia can help you remember ads.
Thank you. Found that very helpful. Chair Hansen, you can proceed with your bill presentation.
Thank you, Chair Hornstein. And some may wonder, why do we have the Highways for Habitat with a living snow fences? Well, they can complement each other. You saw in the video where you have habitat near the road that can provide pollinator habitat and catch snow. And so it's a kind of a comprehensive list of tools that are there for the MnDOT road managers. Again, this is only on MnDOT highways, not road authorities, counties, townships, etc. They're encouraged, but not required. And I believe there are testifiers.
Thank you so much. And we will have an opportunity to question Chair Hansen and have a committee discussion after the public testimony. So we have Tina Markison.
Good morning.
Good morning. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Tina Markison. I work for MnDOT in the Office of Environmental Stewardship. And so we'll just dive in. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, my name is Tina Markison. I work for the Office of Environmental Stewardship as the Roadside Vegetation Management Unit Supervisor. MnDOT manages interstate, U.S., and state highway rights-of-way for multiple reasons that are including but not limited to maintaining engineered base and slopes for support of infrastructure, water infiltration and conveyance, blowing snow like you just saw, survey markers and roadside weather stations, aesthetics including screening to and from adjacent land uses, and also habitat for protected species. House File 498 contains much of the work and practices that MnDOT already has in place. Some of these examples are we use integrated roadside vegetation management. Like Representative Hansen mentioned earlier, it's not a brand new concept, and it's something that MnDOT has been using in the 20 years that I've been with MnDOT. Roadside vegetation management includes mowing, biological controls, herbicides, prescribed fire, mechanical tree removal and brush removal, native plantings of grass, grasses, wildflowers, shrubs, and trees. We also have MnDOT's sustainability plan that targets the planting of native seeds, trees, shrubs, and perennials on MnDOT's large projects. As part of that sustainability plan, the goal or the target is to have 75% of acres planted with native seed, 80% of plants on urban projects are native material, 90% of plants on rural projects are native material. The reason why these numbers are not 100% is because not all right-of-way is appropriate for the creation of pollinator habitat and or native plants. We are developing specialized maintenance plans for specific areas on our roadsides where changes to standard maintenance practices are needed in order to maintain habitat for these protected species. We also partner with and use plans created by DNR and Bowser, the Board of Water and Soil Resources, to help guide seed mixes, establishment, and maintenance activities. Finally, I'd like to recommend 4 modifications or clarifications to the bill. We will continue to work together with DNR and Bowser on the needs, soils, and follow-up maintenance on right-of-way and versus the typical lands revegetated by the DNR and Bowser greatly differ. Instead of using their guidelines as pointed out in the bill, we would like to see specific roadside vegetation establishment guidelines. While the one-time appropriation will be used to enhance MnDOT's existing roadside vegetation management, the funding is short-term. This short-term funding structure is similar to the DNR's Roadsides for Wildlife program, which ebbs and flows when grants and state legislative funding is available. If the goal is to establish a program similar to Iowa's county roadside programs, then long-term funding is needed. As the answer to that long-term funding question in Iowa, the Iowa legislature created a trust fund, the Iowa Living Roadsides Trust Fund, to fund roadside vegetation management in Iowa. Clarification is needed regarding language definitions that are listed in the bill. Some of these include on line 3.25, right-of-way mile. That is not a term that is used in MnDOT, and I'm not sure what the definition is. Another term that needs to be defined is other chemicals, listed on line 413. There's also a potential conflict with the noxious weed law that needs to be addressed. As stated in the beginning, there are multiple needs that MnDOT uses our right-of-way to address. MnDOT will need some allowances to prioritize these other needs above pollinator habitat in order to maintain the road infrastructure and safety. We continue to monitor and fund scientific research on roadside vegetation management and update standard practices as successful research is completed. We are happy to work with the bill author to address these issues. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much for your testimony. And are there any questions of the testifier? Chair Hansen.
Mr. Chair, I think all of these things are achievable. Be up to the committee for ongoing funding. So, of course, I would ask if you wanted to do that, that would be great.
We'll take a look at the Iowa example here. I know that's a little dangerous to say, but but we will. Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, question, do we have an estimate of how many miles of ditches this particular program would apply to? Can you explain to us how it would be administered? Pretend I'm a landowner on one of these state highways, which I don't own the land, but I farm on a piece of land that could potentially be affected by this. Can you walk me through, pretending I was the person that made all the decisions with my farm, which I'm not, but can you walk through how this will be implemented and especially how it will affect farmers?
Yes.
Proceed. Thank you.
Mr. Chair and committee, MnDOT owns approximately 175 acres of green space. That includes our roadsides and also median areas. So it's kind of our land minus all the impermeable pavement areas. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, 175,000 acres, give or take. And so not all of these areas would be underneath the pollinator program. There is ongoing research right now as to how close to roads pollinator habitat is beneficial and how much of it is a population sink. So we bring the insects in and then they leave that site and there's cars. So, you know, how much of that is not beneficial. So we would be looking at less than 175,000 acres. We don't have an exact number on how where all of these areas and where the potential areas are. In order to figure out, you know, where to prioritize our efforts, we do use the DNR's Prairie Plan to try to make some of those connections of those conservation lands that the DNR has identified when we do have projects going through those areas. Now, if you're a farmer, this program would only affect MnDOT's roadside. And so how it would affect your land You'd have potentially pollinator habitat adjacent to your property, but it would not extend onto your property. It would be contained within MnDOT's roadsides and right of way. Does that answer your question, or is there additional?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. So if I'm getting this straight, so I have a field that's on 169. All right, so I assume that that is a road that would be within the purview of the state mm-hmm. of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. My ditch, the ditch that we bale yearly in order to provide food for animals, especially seeing as now there was such a crazy drought in South Dakota, farmers from Minnesota are making considerable amounts of money selling that hay to individuals in South Dakota who are having a hard time feeding their animals to make their living. Can you explain to me how that will work with regards to my ditch on 169?
So anytime that adjacent landowners or other third party wish to access the right-of-way, we ask that that person apply for a permit from MnDOT in order to be on the right-of-way. And that just makes sure that the two parties are communicating any concerns that are out there. We've worked with farmers in a couple areas of the state where we've got pollinator habitat, and we've said, you know, this is our goal. Mowing and haying is not totally off the table because it can be a management technique. We just need to have those communications so that we are understanding the needs of the right-of-way and making sure that those are being maintained. But it's that combination and that communication between the person who's asking for the permit and MnDOT to make sure that the action is going to benefit all parties.
One more follow-up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think to the committee, I think it's very important to understand that whereas I have a field on 169 that I farm, it is 217.8 acres tillable. We pay taxes for 220 acres because that we pay all the way to the center of the road. So whereas we're talking about this thing called the right-of-way, we pay taxes all the way to the center of the road. We pay taxes for that ditch. And when the department or when someone is coming into our area and telling us that the land that you pay the taxes up into the center of that road you cannot utilize, that's when we start having real problems. I think there's a fine line. There's a balance. We've done this for hundreds of, you know, we've paid taxes to the center of the road for 150 years. It's not going to change. But I think when we start encroaching upon a farmer or an individual's ability to make money, that's where we start doing some real problems. So I'm not a huge fan of this idea. I think that there are ways in which we can better it in order to make sure that, you know, I know a lot of farmers who are very conservation-oriented, and so if it was, and I know that this allocation probably will not fully fund the 175,000 acres that you say that you control the right-of-way that the farmers pay the taxes or the landowners pay the taxes to the center of the road for. I think that if we were to create a program in which those who want to, you know, There are some ditches that are just dangerous to mow. You know, you can't do that. You're going to tip your tractor over. You're going to have some issues. If there was a way in which farmers could benefit from putting that into something, I think that's a highly conducive relationship, and that's what we need to strive for. We can't sit here and say, sorry, you pay the taxes to the center of the road, but we control it and we get to do what we want. So that's a problem. So I would really appreciate moving forward, if this policy does become law, I would very much appreciate us working together with the farmers, those who are consciously conservation-minded, who are saying, I can't mow this or I have no interest in mowing this, I don't have animals and I don't want to take the time to do it. If we were to work with them and provide them with that ability before we start willy-nilly saying, hey, you know, you've got a spot, the snow drifts, we're going to make a living snow fence there. There are areas where farmers are paid to leave one combine swipe growing. They just don't harvest it. And that is an amazing snow fence. So we can do that. We can work with the people who are trying to make a living in this state. We can do that. And we can do it effectively. And we can make sure that no one's toes are stepped on. And we can all achieve our goals. And I would ask that the department, if this becomes law, that they would look into making sure that this is a very, very amicable relationship between the farmers and the individuals within the department.
Thank you for your comments and questions, Representative Olson. I think that Representative Hansen wanted to make a quick comment, and then we'll have Representative Petersburg and Representative Murphy. Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, when it's the public right-of-way, you may be paying taxes on it, but all of us are paying taxes and taking care of the rights-of-way management. We're all taking care of the road. And it's a public right-of-way. And there are differences among right-of-way ownership. So let's take, for example, Chair Hornstein. If for years I had a neighbor and then you moved next to me, and on the property that you had an apple tree. And every year for 100 years, my and my family were coming and getting the apples. But now you've moved on that. And you don't want me to take the apples anymore. Because you like the apple tree. And you're going to feed everybody in the neighborhood with that apple tree. Because there's a public benefit in that apple tree. There's a public benefit of putting in the living snow fences. And the farmers are compensated. That's the $2 million we're talking about. It's to go to the farmers to compensate them for the cornfield. And choices, we're not, what we're actually doing in the bill is providing discretion to the department so they can choose from a menu of options to work with landowners to make the best choices. But there is the whole, all of us, on the public right-of-way. And the public right-of-way is not for profit. It's for the public.
Thank you, Chair Hansen. Representative Petersburg, and then Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I wanted to just kind of emphasize what Representative Olson had talked about. When you do buy a farm, you buy the farm up to the middle of the road. And that's part of the land that you buy. And right-of-way is different than ownership. And I think that's a distinction because the right-of-way is actually easement that is granted to the state for use of that, not ownership. But the right to be able to use it, unless I'm wrong in that, if somebody could correct me if I'm wrong there. But that's an easement that's there. And that means that there is still ownership, maintenance, and so forth that the farmer has. This DE takes away all of the previous negotiated decisions done for road ditch management and so forth prior to this. And I remember a few years ago how contentious that was. Dealing with that. And so I think that's something that we want to be real careful about when we decide how we do that, because road maintenance and road ditch maintenance also has a safety factor from deer and others that have to be determined. It's not just about snow removal either. And so I think we have to be very cautious about how we manage that. And I'll like to read that a little bit in more detail to see exactly what's going on. But I do think, as the department has said, there are some things that still need to be worked out on this bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. And then our last committee member with a question and or comment to this
question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. My experience is I've bailed those ditches for my whole life. I mean, before me, I bailed ditches on State Highway. We cared for those ditches too. I mean, it was they're the part of what keeps the grass down from being real tall next to the road. And there's plenty of accidents on the highway I grew up on. Certainly having options and thinking about those with regard to Representative Olson's comments is key. I mean, certainly to have options with corn alongside. On the other hand, in my county that I represent, Otter Tail and Douglas County, we have a lot of issues with wildlife, you know, so if you know where the deer are going to cross, that's nice too, because I personally met quite a few deer, and if these, depending on where the roads are crossing and where these snow fences are, and I guess my question to that is, are the snow fences ever going to be, or these vegetation areas, ever going to be an area that's alongside heavily wooded areas or grass-like marsh areas where in our area, there's plenty of deer traffic, and I know my family, we're probably around 10 that we've hit. It's just really common up there to have damage and to have problems by hitting deer. So those are the two comments I'd like some response on. Thanks.
I think Chair Hansen is ready to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And, you know, maybe the committee would have an opportunity to look at what the federal programs are doing now with wildlife crossings. You're seeing a lot of work being done and funded, I think, through the Inflation Reduction Act on wildlife crossings. And that's not just for deer, but other critters. The scientists at MnDOT have a pretty good handle where there's a lot of crossings because you just look at the data where the deer have been. And there's traditional areas where they cross. And there have been, whether it's tunnels or other, in some states with migration, we don't have migration with deer compared to elk or other herbivores, but they've actually built crossings over the road and you can see where they go. So it's a fascinating area where there's been a lot of federal money. Obviously, we can't build a bridge everywhere where deer are going, but there's work being done on that to help identify and to do a better job of also alerting drivers on, rather than just the old deer crossing sign, you know, but some efforts on managing wildlife. And, the department can talk about the science a little bit, that what they do with IRVM to provide those research. When you look at some of the statute that we are changing, we're actually moving away from prescriptive, this is what you shall do, to giving them discretion to use the tools and the evolving science on this. It's that integrated roadside vegetation management so that they can bring in and put in, you may find a planting that is more conducive to deer. It seems like they eat everything on my farm, but if you are, you know, there's plantings, there's things that you can do, and there's a lot of science behind it.
It sounds like we were asking for a comment here, Ms. Markison. If you so choose.
Mr. Chair and Committee, as I mentioned before, I'm a roadside vegetation manager, and so we have a wildlife ecologist at MnDOT that would be much more a better person to answer the questions regarding deer and deer crossing areas than I would be. But yes, we are looking at what's in our seed mixes and trying to figure out how to minimize that. But any place that there's vegetation, there's insects. Anywhere there's insects, there's going to be things that eat insects and fill up the food chain. So yeah, if your question is about wildlife crossing and deer crossings, I would request that we have an additional person who is not present today answer those questions.
Okay, thank you. We'll have one more question or comment from Representative Murphy, and then I'll ask if there's any additional testifiers, and then we'll have some closing comments from the author and move on.
Thank Representative you, Murphy. Just in my experience, the deer aren't very good at reading signs. They don't typically know where the crossings are. And unless you dictate what the farmer's going to plant right there, we don't have much control. Just this last weekend, we went by a just off the right-of-way next to a farmyard. There's corn planted there left for the deer, but it's in near an intersection, and the comment was it's really creating a lot of problems because we're hitting a lot of those deer. So just in general, I think the farmer should be a really key part of this conversation, not the afterthought of the conversation. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else in the audience that wants to testify on House File 498? President Petersburg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is just a question for you in general. Have we gotten any kind of indication from leadership yet on what kind of target you might be given? I mean, this uses $3 million out of general fund. And are there any indications that we may get some, a little, or not? And I know it's early, but sometimes you get some precursors.
No, thank you for the question, Representative Petersburg. No, we don't have information on that quite yet.
Thanks.
And, there are, of course, as you correctly point out, we have a number of big ticket items. I think if you look at the bill from last year, that I think are still around. So,
right. Yeah, because this also takes money out of Trunk Highway Fund, too,
right,
which also
right.
uses,
yeah.
And that's a concern. So thank
yeah,
you.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, I don't see, I'm sorry. Representative Brand?
He wants to testify.
Oh, I see. Okay.
I just have one more comment
sure.
In response to Representative Murphy, if I can, Mr. Chair.
You should proceed, Ms. Martin.
So one of the things with the living snow fences and standing corn rows that MnDOT pays for is it's really important that the structure of the corn be the corn plant be there, and that's really what's providing that protection to the road. we do not restrict the farmer from going in there and hand harvesting the corn. And so there has been in the past where a farmer has sponsored a 4-H group to come out and harvest, handpick the corn. And then, you know, there's some of that stuff going on as well. So so it's really that the structure of the corn plant that MnDOT is interested in for those living, for those standing corn rows when we are using that method. So.
Okay, we'll have a comment from Chair Hansen and some brief testimony from Mr. Arnasty, and then we'll move on to the next bill. Chair Hansen.
And Representative Murphy, if you need anybody to hand harvest corn, I know some Amish farmers that would be happy.
Great. So we'll hear from Mr. Arnasty briefly, and then we'll have closing comments from the bill author. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Don Arnasty. I'm here representing the Pollinator Friendly Alliance, which is a coalition of groups that are concerned and interested about our pollinators. I'd like to applaud Chair Hansen and the committee for hearing this bill. We think this is a really important step forward. Many, many years ago, more than a generation ago, there was just a broad fiat applied to how mowing should occur in the right-of-way for purposes of wildlife benefits, pheasants in particular. This is a much-needed update and increase in flexibility and tools that are being given to the department to apply modern science and the learning that's been done in 25 years that Iowa has been running a comparable program. There's a lot of research, which I didn't bring with me today, that Iowa has been able to do. Their Tall Grass Prairie Institute has been studying their roadside management for years, and it has to do with deer interactions and other wildlife impacts. And I'm going by memory because I didn't bring the study with me, but my memory is this kind of management actually reduces deer car impacts, because the deer actually favor the freshly mowed surfaces. That's the browse that they like, and they're drawn to those freshly mowed surfaces, and somewhat older vegetation is less attractive to deer. There are many benefits from this type of management, certainly for birds and pollinators, but also for reduced maintenance. And again, this has been proven by research in Iowa, reduced maintenance and improved performance of the right-of-way in terms of water control and erosion control. So I thank you very much for hearing the bill, and we urge you to work out the minor issues, really, that I think MnDOT brought up and included in legislation passed this year. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Arnasty. Great. Well, thank you. I'll just make a couple of quick comments and then hand it over to Chair Hansen for the last word. Appreciate, again, the really constructive engagement of the committee with this. And, you know, this is really both for this bill and the next bill we're about to hear, this is why we do hearings. You know, we want to get the issues out, vetted, and, you know, return to them. And, you know, this bill will probably be in a potentially different form with, you know, based on some of the comments that were made today and the suggestions that MnDOT had made. And, you know, we'll work closely with the author on those. And so the bill will come back. But I think this hearing was incredibly important in terms of, you know, vetting some of the issues. And so with that, I will ask for any closing comments from the author, Chair Hansen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I don't think we're that far apart. I think there are things we can work on to clarify and make sure that we're you know, there are differences where there has been fee title acquisition versus easement, and maybe we can delineate that. I think there's things we can work on with MnDOT. As I said, it's not that far apart. Be happy to work with anybody on the committee, you know, particularly those that are interested in ongoing funding, Mr. Chair. So happy to work with you. This is an opportunity, one-time dollars, I think, with the living snow fences particularly, to get those out. It's a proven program. And then I think the Highways for Habitat also provides a way to reach federal dollars that could be coming to our state to be working with people. So I'd ask for your support. I appreciate the opportunity and the ability to lay this over.
Thank you so much. And again, thanks to the committee for a great discussion. Thanks to MnDOT, too, as well. With that, House File 498 is laid over. Okay, we'll have a little changing of the guard here, and be handing over the gavel to Vice Chair Tabke.
All right, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. We're going to move forward with House File 401. And, Mr. Chair, when you're ready, would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would move that House File 401 be laid over for possible inclusion in an omnibus. This will be a specific transportation policy bill. As I indicated, members, the other day, that we will have policy and finance moving separately this year, although this will have a small financial component, but it's generally the old-fashioned policy bill that we used to have in these parts back in the day. So, members, I just wanted to give a little context for this bill before I call on Mr. Burris to kind of go through it, some of the very specific provisions. This is a an effort to move along agreements that were made between the House and Senate last year, in fact, in May. We had a conference committee that Chair Nelson chaired last year where transportation, state government, and veterans affairs were all combined. And as many of you know, because of the situation at the end of session, a number of provisions were agreed to in this conference committee, and that these were specific transportation provisions that we actually had votes on and were approved by the House-Senate conference committee last year. But again, not enacted into law because we didn't have a universal agreement on a number of issues. And at the end of session, I'd have to go through that history again. But just ran out of time. And so what we wanted to do was House File 401 really is an amalgam of those agreed to provisions. Now, I will, I think it's for those who were watching the process last year, you know, I don't know if I can't vouch for the fact that all of these provisions were thoroughly vetted. I think agreements were made and understandings were reached, but, you know, there's not necessarily consensus on those. And so I think that what we're doing today is, I hope, starting to vet some of these issues a little more carefully and thoughtfully, and that's why this bill is being laid over. Since the bill was introduced publicly, and a number of interested parties have communicated with me, and we'll hear from them as well. The goal isn't necessarily to reach consensus or agreement on every issue, but certainly to hear concerns and address those concerns where we can. And so I'm really pleased that a number of people have stepped forward and will work on these issues as best we can where there is a need to improve the bill or need for clarification on matters. So I just wanted to put that forward, and this will move a lot of issues forward that we might need to hear separately, or might have needed to hear separately. But we do want to make sure that all voices are heard and that we can make these improvements. And so, with that, Mr. Chair, I'm going to have Mr. Burris just kind of go through the bill. And then I'll be happy to answer questions, and I know we have a number of testifiers.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chair. Mr. Burris, please proceed.
Mr. Chair and members, Matt Burris with House Research. So as Representative Hornstein noted, I was asked to walk through the sections in the bill. I'll move pretty quickly at a high level, but can circle back and answer further questions. So Section 1 makes some modifications to a data security account that's in the Special Revenue Fund, and it changes what the direction is on using the funds for IT-related auditing. That is direction to the Office of the Legislative Auditor, and it creates a statutory appropriation of funds in the account. Section 2 relates to facilities that are used for micro-mobility, such as e-scooters, shared bicycles, e-bikes, and allows for advertising on those types of facilities when placed in the right-of-way, and this would be by permit issued by local units of government. There's a corresponding section later in the bill that sets up a definition. And then moving to section 3, this is one piece of a change in the statutory designation of trunk highway. Just for a little bit of context, the trunk highway system is entirely established through statutory descriptions, and this comes out of constitutional requirements. So changes in the collection or the set of routes for the trunk highway system are established through additions, modifications, and repeals of statutory descriptions. So this is part of a trunk highway reroute. Sections 4 and 5 relate to the state aid programs for county state aid and municipal state aid street and how the routes are defined, like what's included in the calculations for formula-based allocations of funds under those two aid programs. Section 6 also relates to the municipal state aid street system and makes some modifications to a screening board and some of the requirements around how the board provides information, receives information to MnDOT in its review, including modifying who serves on that board. Section 7 adds an additional special license plate. There are a number of technical changes that are new to this in comparison to last year to establish some separate subdivisions for different plates. So the substantive language is found on page 7. This would create a new special plate for air metal veterans. The rest of the changes are technical and conforming in that section. So I just wanted to note that because there's a fair amount of technical activity going on in that section. And then section 8 is a clarifying change that relates to the Veterans Service Group special plate to establish or clarify eligibility for that plate. Section 9 establishes that there's not a fee charged for another special plate Gold Star families. A couple other special plate provisions are found in the subsequent sections. So Section 10 establishes a new special plate for Minnesota Professional Sports Team Foundations. And then Section 11 creates a special plate for Minnesota Missing and Murdered Indigenous Relatives. And both of those are contribution plates. So there's a contribution that goes along with each of the special plates. There's some general eligibility requirements that broadly match the kind of typical structure for special plates, as well as transfer provisions, and then appropriations of the contribution funds, which for each plate goes into an account that then is sent out. Section 13 is an addition in comparison to the provisions that were discussed in the conference committee last year. It would create a new reporting requirement for the Department of Public Safety on all special plates. This is sort of a modification from what was proposed on a plate-by-plate basis in the two special plates that had been proposed last year. So it creates a sort of universal reporting requirement on contribution funds, where the funds go, how the funds were spent across the various existing and newly being proposed special plates. Oh, and then I think I skipped over Section 12, which is a conforming change to another provision. Section 14 relates to regulation of various types of motor vehicle dealers and brokers. These are regulations that are enforced under the Department of Public Safety and would broaden situations when a license for a dealer could be denied by the department based on things like not complying with dealer location requirements or misrepresentations. Section 15 also relates to motor vehicle dealer requirements and modifies the hours in which inspections of dealer records can be taken or made. Section 16 is that definition I had mentioned earlier on defining micromobility devices. Section 17 modifies a special permit for hauling forest products. This section also has a number of technical changes that are largely to conform the structure and language with the general standard for how special plates are established in statute. So it's something of a modernization. The key substantive change is found in subdivision 1B, that's on page 14, and this would create a new type of permit or variance, if you will, that allows for both overweight and overwidth vehicles when hauling under some circumstances. And then moving to page 16, section 18 is also a special overweight vehicle permit provision. This is for the farm product special permit and would add to the list of types of products that qualify to be transported under the permit. Section 19 relates to a special series plate, and also known as whiskey plates, and would eliminate some license holder requirements in order to obtain the plate. And then Section 20 adds to the list of documents that can be provided to demonstrate residency in the application for a Real ID compliant license or identification card. So that somebody could also provide a internet service bill. Section 21 modifies the eligibility and documentation requirements in order for an applicant for a driver's license or identification card to get a veteran designation on that credential. Section 22 relates to the ignition interlock program and broadens the situations when proof of insurance coverage is required for some applicants under that program on the basis of having lost driving privileges due to insurance-related violations. And then Section 23 is a modification to a pavement lifecycle cost analysis process that MnDOT must undergo as part of construction projects. There are a couple of different changes in that section. There's a modification to the criteria or threshold when the analysis must be performed, some further details on the analysis, and then a number of process and review steps that are included in the revised proposal. And then sections 24 and 25 relate to pipeline safety violations, both violations of regulations as well as failures to report pipeline discharges. And both those changes revise the civil penalties that can be imposed to use maximums that are tied to federal laws that govern this area. Rather than having statutorily set maximums. Section 26 is a technical change that is to clarify language as part of title branding provisions that had been enacted by the legislature last year. Section 27 goes along with Section 28, which makes some modifications to regulation of small unmanned aircraft systems. Primarily, it's to clarify what the levels of insurance required are, and some of that includes some substantially reproduced language that's being moved from one section to another. Section 29 is a direction to the Metropolitan Council to provide training for bus operators on assisting persons with disabilities and mobility limitations. And then Section 30 makes a modification to a study that the legislature had directed in 2021. It changes the funding source, has the Met Council instead of MnDOT perform the reporting and shifts out the due date for that report. Sections 31 and 32 provide for jurisdiction transfers or turnbacks of trunk highways subject to agreements with a county and a city. And then finally, Section 33 repeals an administrative rule that's part of MnDOT's administrative rules on transit operator reporting. And then I might also note, one thing I meant to note at the outset is that a number of these provisions had been proposed by the department last year. I'm not sure of the status or sponsorship of them this year.
Thank you very much, Mr. Burris. Chair Hornsey.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chair, and I think that last point from Mr. Burris is very important. You know, one of the reasons we want to vet this is that, you know, have there been developments since this was last discussed? And do we need to add or revise any of these policies? You know, I understand, for example, on the I learned just yesterday from Commissioner Daubenberger that there's been discussions over the summer, you know, regarding the pavement, life cycle pavement provision. So that's an example of new information coming, we'll hear from some of those testifiers as well today. So it's good that we're doing this. And again, I think for some, this may be the first time that the House has looked at these, because in a conference committee, as you know, there's oftentimes a provision that's House only or Senate only, and sometimes we'll take a Senate-only provision, but it hasn't been heard. So this is maybe it was a blessing in disguise that we weren't able to enact this, because we'll have a more thorough hearing, and it's always up to us, too. We don't have to take the Senate provisions either, but these were agreed to by both the House and the Senate, and so that's why they're before us now. So with that context, Mr. Chair, I don't know if there's questions. I know we have a number of testifiers. I would like to make sure that they have a chance to testify before we adjourn at 10 o'clock.
Perfect. So would you like to go to testifiers now?
Yeah, I mean, yep. Are there, I mean, I guess maybe, Mr. Chair, if there's a couple of committee questions, we can take them. But I am conscious of time and the fact that we have a pretty good list of testifiers. So
I have yet to see any questions. Representative Petersburg.
Just two, Mr. Chair, and thank you. And Section 26, by the way, is a bill that I actually had heard in Commerce yesterday, and they have moved it to the General Registry. So you may want to talk to leadership on whether they're doing that standalone or included in your bill. That's the correction for the title license.
That's a good catch, Mr. Chair.
So you can check with that and see if they go. Otherwise, it may fit in your bill, too. Question is just in process. Are you planning on bringing this back and doing a full just policy-only bill later, and then a finance omnibus bill as well?
Chair Hornsey.
Mr. Chair, Representative Petersburg, that's a good question. I think that sort of depends on our ability. You know, you'll hear this in the testimony. I mean, there are some areas of contention here. And to the best of our ability, I'd like to work through those issues. Sometimes you can't work it through entirely. But I hope that, you know, our first bill deadline is March 10th. And if we get to a point where this bill isn't ready in the next couple of weeks, we may, you know, just kick it into a broader bill. One comment before the testifiers, Mr. Chair, that I wanted to make. For those, I know we've had a flurry of special plate requests coming in. And I know we have a few here, and I don't want those who have special plate requests pending to get too excited. We're going to include these because they were agreed upon and vetted last year. And I don't think it's proper if we choose to do a different process for plates this year, that these would then have to be subject to a potential different process. So, you know, again, these I think were vetted. They were in the bill last year. I think they're good to go. But again, we've had, I know Ms. Swaggart and I, have been talking about this. I mean, a lot are coming in, and I think it's, I'm looking at this man, my mentor, former chair leader, really did not like these, and I think that Senator Dibble and I are having some conversations about perhaps a a different process to address the, again, massive number of special plate requests that we have. So, again, good to go here. We worked on these last year. Doesn't mean that every special plate request will be granted moving forward. So with that, maybe we can do our testimony, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair Hornstein. And as Chair Hornstein said, we do have a number of testifiers today, so please keep your testimony brief. So we have MnDOT Commissioner Dobenberger to start, and then DVS Director Pong Zhang after that. So, Commissioner? Thank you for being here. Please proceed. Say your name for the record, and please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Nancy Dobenberger, and I'm the commissioner of the Minnesota Department of Transportation. And on behalf of MnDOT, thank you for the opportunity to share MnDOT's perspective on House File 401. We appreciate your work to move forward some of these previously agreed to policy provisions from last session, Representative Hornstein. And I'd like to take the opportunity to note that the governor's transportation policy proposals for this session will include several of the provisions included in House File 401, along with several new provisions. So for House File 401, we really appreciate the inclusion of several items that are related to the governor's policy proposals from last session, including those related to turnbacks, state aid needs calculation, drones insurance requirements, municipal screening board, and reporting requirements for transit grant recipients. We do have some concerns to the changes to the pavement life cycle cost analysis included in the bill. MnDOT's life cycle cost analysis, LCCA I'll call it, was developed over many years using experience gained from past methods and review of other state DOTs processes, Federal Highway Administration guidance, academic papers, along with input from industry stakeholders. So the current process is based on substantial research and stakeholder input and allows MnDOT districts discretion to use alternative bid processes and select pavement types based on factors like constructability, pavement type continuity, traffic control issues, and effects on businesses. The department met with industry partners last summer and plans on future meetings with them to discuss improving communication channels on LCCAs. We're committed to posting completed LCCAs on our website as soon as they're available, with the goal of having an LCCA completed prior to a project moving into the state transportation improvement program, even if it's less detailed of an analysis at that point. And once on the website, comments could be posted with responses provided by the department in a public manner. We do have concerns with the language that states commissioner must make revisions to the life cycle cost analysis in response to questions or comments received. Since we could get conflicting comments or questions, that can't be reconciled with revisions. We also have some concerns with the phrase, determine the analysis period based on the longest design life of all feasible alternatives or 60 years, whichever is longer, since MnDOT's pavement manual does not have alternatives that extend to 60 years design life. Our current analysis period is 50 years in order to include at least one significant rehabilitation alternative for all options. We appreciate the intent of the required analysis of greenhouse gas emissions in Section 23, Subdivision 2B, Paragraph 9. MnDOT has developed and has been using our Minnesota Infrastructure Carbon Estimator tool, we call it the MICE tool, to evaluate greenhouse gas emissions for the construction of pavement projects. And the Environmental Quality Board recently required environmental assessment worksheets to use a new form that has a greenhouse gas analysis requirement that would be triggered for these larger scale pavement projects. However, we are not yet equipped to do an analysis sophisticated enough to differentiate between pavement types. A research and implementation project began in November of last year to get us on the path to be able to achieve this level of sophistication. And we also obtained a climate challenge grant from the Federal Highway Administration to further the process. We hope to continue to work with you, Mr. Chair, and members, Representative Hornstein, our industry partners, and stakeholders on this proposal and look forward to future discussions. Thank you again for your time and work on this bill, and I stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Commissioner. Any questions for Commissioner Dobenberger? All right, seeing none, thank you very much. Mr. Zhang from DVS is next. Mr. Zhang, please state your name for the record, and please continue with your testimony.
Mr. Chair, Pang Zhang, Director of the Driver and Vehicle Services Division. And I just want to say thank you for Chair Hornstein for continuing to work on this. And DVS continues to support the changes that were provided in this, the DVS provisions that were provided in this bill. And without repeating Mr. Burris's very thorough explanation, I'll just highlight the DVS provisions. Section 8 that includes adds the Disabled American Veterans as a congressionally chartered veteran service organization special plate. Section 9 includes the families of Gold Star or Gold Star families for special plate access and to ensure that there's no fee charged. Sections 14 and 15 really clarify the dealer requirements so that both our staff and our customers are really clear about what those provisions are or what those requirements are to become a dealer in Minnesota. Section 19 really just clarifies the language in which folks can access the plates for DWI offenses. Section 20 includes internet as a utility, and we are seeing more and more customers providing this document as a proof of residency as they're trying to obtain the real ID, and we believe this is a valid form of residency documentation. Section 22 really clarifies ensures that we cover all instances where proof of insurance has been identified. And then lastly, while not a DVS provision, we just want to voice our support for the missing and murdered indigenous relatives plate. While not a DVS initiative, we believe that the funding for that is absolutely necessary, and we support that as well. And again, just overall support for those, continued support for the DVS provisions, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you very much, Mr. Zhang. I apologize for my phone going off in the middle of that. So, Chair Hornstein.
And thank you, Mr. Zhang. And again, just if I wasn't clear, I just want to make sure that, you know, if you are following Section 7 through 11, as far as I'm concerned, you're good to go. Your plates are going to be included. I know there were some conditions that that Chair Cagle had on one of those, but, you know, I think that we'll just let that go, and 7 through 10 are going to be included. But again, what I was saying is moving forward, I think we're going to have to reassess our plates. So good to go, Mr. John, on 7 through 11.
Chair Cagle.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Hornstein. As a true Vikings fan, I was hoping for a Super Bowl and then we'd be able to get our Vikings plates. But I might have some plate suggestions, maybe.
Okay.
I'm just teasing. But thank you very much.
Yeah, we can talk offline if anyone wants to talk offline with Chair Cagle about some of the conditions that she was going to have for that plate. You can talk with her. Just to clarify, we're good to go on 7 through 11. Thank you, Mr. Zhang.
Any further questions? Thank you, Mr. Zhang. Next, we have John Wolfgram, Chief Engineer from Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety. Mr. Wolfgram, please state your name for the record and continue with your testimony.
Morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is John Wolfgram. I'm the Deputy Director of the Minnesota Office of Pipeline Safety. Thank you for the opportunity to give you a little bit of background to the Section 24 and 25 regarding the civil penalty changes for pipeline safety. This proposal aims to revise our current pipeline safety civil penalties in Minnesota Statute 299F and 299J. This revision change was prompted in follow-up to an annual pipeline safety grant evaluations that we have each year from the Pipeline and Hazardous Materials Safety Administration, or PHMSA. PHMSA comes on an annual basis as they are grant providers to our pipeline safety programs for inspection of natural gas, underground storage, and hazardous liquid pipeline programs. MNOPS is largely funded through grants from PHMSA. In a recent letter from PHMSA and subsequent letters dating back to 2019, PHMSA has encouraged states to, including the state of Minnesota, to adopt pipeline safety civil penalty provisions under the state or under the federal pipeline safety codes. This revision would aim to revise our current 100,000, 1 million structure in statute to adopt the PHMSA structure of $200,000 with a $2 million cap as codified in 49 CFR Part 190. The most recent letter from PHMSA did state that if we were unable to change these civil penalty amounts, we would it'd be likely that we would be losing our ability to enforce our pipeline safety regulations and follow up to underground natural gas storage inspections. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions that the committee might have.
Thank you very much, Mr. Wolfgram. Seeing no questions, I appreciate your testimony, so thank you. Next, we have Rick Horton and Ray Higgins from Minnesota Forest Industries and Minnesota Timber Producers Association. When you're ready, please say your names for the record and continue with the testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members, for having me. My name is Rick Horton. I'm the Executive Vice President of Minnesota Forest Industries. We're a trade organization representing the large primary wood-consuming mills in the state. We support House File 401, specifically Section 17, beginning on page 13, the MnDOT permit to for logging trucks to allow a wider width, 12 inches wider than standard, up to 9.5 feet. The major reasons for this are to fulfill a societal need and also to maximize the efficient use of raw materials. To the former, the standard ceiling height in homes nowadays is 9 foot. MFI member company Potlatch Deltic in Bemidji makes construction 2x4s for stud walls, and as you can imagine, it's hard to make a 9 foot stud out of an 8.5 foot log. So they need to take about 20% of their logs at this longer length in order to make 9 foot wall studs. And then to the latter point, MFI member company Savannah Pallets in McGregor makes pallets and shipping materials, and they come in all different sizes, and at times it's much more efficient to use a longer log so you have less waste. For example, cutting 2-3 foot boards out of an 8 foot raw material length results in 2 feet of waste. So if they can get a 9 foot log, you know, 9.5 is so you can trim the edges, but if they get a 9 foot log, they can get 3 boards out of that and not waste as much raw materials. So, and then there's also a specialty sawmill up in Baudette called Jake's Sawmill that is requesting these longer lengths. Based on the timber hauled to these companies compared to all the other wood in the state, this would amount to about 4% of the timber, so it's not every logging truck. It's just going to be a small number asking for this special permit.
Thank you very much. Mr. Higgins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. I'm Ray Higgins. I'm with the Minnesota Timber Producers Association. We're a trade association representing loggers, truckers, small sawmills, and allied businesses in our state. We also support the provision, as Mr. Horton said. You know, farmers in Minnesota can get a permit to haul up to 12 feet in width for hay bales. We just want to do the same thing on a smaller scale, purchase a permit to do this legally. But, of course, we don't want as much width as the farmers have. The current max width is 8.5 feet. We would want 9.5 feet, and that's what the provision indicates. Included in the provision are several safety measures that go along with it, flags on the load, wider mirrors, restrictions on when the loads can be on the road, including the fact that they wouldn't be allowed here in the Twin Cities metro area. We spent a lot of time talking about safety with our members. We spent a lot of time talking about safety with the patrol. We have constant interactions with the patrol, looking for advice on how to keep our members safe and compliant. We talk a lot about weight. And one thing to be clear, that while the provision talks about having weight and width on the same permit, this would not change the weight laws in Minnesota. This would only pertains to width, but the fact that they would be on the same permit is why weight was mentioned. But this provision does not change weight in any way in Minnesota. We've also had, as well as the State Patrol, we've had conversations with MnDOT and several other groups about this provision to try to make sure that we're all on the same page. So I appreciate, Chair Hornstein, your leadership on this. Representative Eklund last session, Representative Liz Lagarde this session, and others who have helped co-author this provision. So thank you for your attention on this, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Next up on the list is Sarah Erickson from Unite Strategies.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. My name is Sarah Erickson. I'm here today representing the Minnesota Regional Rail Association. I'm here to share concerns with just one provision in the bill today, the addition of the raw seed processed grass on line 16.11. The Minnesota rail industry has consistently taken a position against continued exemptions that allow for bigger and heavier trucks on Minnesota roadways. Exemptions to the state and federal 80,000-pound weight limit is a slippery slope. Every time the legislature approves truck weight exemptions, it becomes precedent for the next time. We testified last year with concerns in the Senate, not in the House, where this provision originated. When the state is making decisions that make it easier to pass legislation affecting our economic interests and also potentially affects competition between industries, we will always have concerns. We appreciate that this one instance might not affect us directly, but we never want these exemptions to be a matter of course. Taken one by one, they can seem innocuous, but added together, they fundamentally shift how the transportation markets work in Minnesota, and we don't believe the government should be in the business of picking winners and losers. Thank you very much for allowing me to testify today, and I will stand for any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Erickson. Seeing no questions, I appreciate your testimony. And moving on to Abby Braddock from Minnesota Asphalt Paving Association.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. For the record, my name is Abby Braddock. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Asphalt Pavement Association. I'm glad Chair Hornstein brought up Representative Leader, because I was going to if you didn't. Regarding the special plates, he thought license plates were for public safety recognition and not for advertising. That's not the main reason I'm here today. So I want to thank Chair Leader and MnDOT for being open to discussing these LTCA issues. Yes, we did have some good meetings over the summer, and I think we made some progress. What's most important to us in that portion of the legislation is the transparency that would be provided with explanations for why certain materials choices were made. We do have a concern with the same section, actually, that MnDOT brought up on the greenhouse gas evaluation. We don't have concerns with the evaluation. In fact, nationally, the asphalt industry is committed to achieving net zero in asphalt production by the year 2050. So that is not a concern of ours necessarily, but we are concerned that MnDOT doesn't have the tools we need at this time to do those evaluations. A greenhouse gas, or the LCCA evaluation, is really meant to look at the cost of a project to the department. Looking at greenhouse gas emissions would be more of a life cost assessment process, which is a different process that MnDOT can do. Anyway, we feel like that should be better. It would be better addressed with that kind of a process. In addition, there are so many opportunities right now with the federal money that's coming in. I think what would serve this effort the best way would be to have a stakeholder group to figure out how we can achieve some good buy clean procurement processes for Minnesota. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Braddock. Any questions? Oh, yes, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry, can you walk me through again? I did not follow you on the issue you have.
Representative Kraft, would you grab your microphone?
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. Could you walk me through again the issue you have with the greenhouse gas analysis? I didn't quite, other than you say they don't have the tools to analyze it. Is there more than that?
Ms. Braddock.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes, they don't have the tools to do it, but I also believe that it should be done within a different process. The LCCA process is meant to determine the financial cost to the department of a project, not address greenhouse gas emissions. They do have a product that they mentioned, the Minnesota Infrastructure Carbon Estimator, but it is specifically not to be used for pavement selection, and it doesn't have the ability to evaluate the use phase of the road, if that makes sense.
Okay, thanks. I'm interested in learning more about this, but you're not fine.
Thank you. Any further questions? Thank you, Ms. Braddock. Next, we have Dan Labo and Joe Bagnoli from Pavement Association. Concrete, there we go. I'm a little rusty, sorry. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Uh, good
Good morning, and thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Dan LeBeau, and I'm the Director of Engineering Services for the Concrete Paving Association in Minnesota, which represents contractors and material suppliers that produce the vast majority of concrete pavements in Minnesota. Thank you for allowing me to testify at today's hearing. I'm here to in strong support of the language in House File 401 regarding MnDOT conducting and using the tools of a life cycle cost analysis in its road selection process. A life cycle cost analysis is an economic process. It considers many factors, including the cost over the entire life of the road, not only what it costs to build the road up front, but also to the cost to the taxpayers. For example, it takes into account maintenance and other factors after initial construction. It gives MnDOT solid and trustworthy information about what the road will likely cost over its full useful life, enabling MnDOT to include reasonable economic calculations in the pavement selection process in a transparent and common sense manner. Further, long-term fixes are frequently the best way to minimize negative impacts to both the taxpayers and the environment. Some quick history of this provision. In 2009, the Minnesota State Legislature passed the current life cycle cost analysis law that requires MnDOT to perform this important economic analysis, though the language was general in nature. Then, in 2004, the Office of the Legislative Auditor conducted an audit of MnDOT's LCCA process and implementation. From that audit, they recommended MnDOT ways to improve its process. At that time, MnDOT responded that they would continue to review opportunities to improve this process. However, effective resolution to those recommendations has yet to be implemented systematically. And last year, in the 2022 legislative session, a comprehensive overhaul of the LCCA law was introduced, which would fully account for the cost to MnDOT to produce designs, administer construction inspection, mobilize contractors to the project, and provide traffic control, and all significant roadway user costs, such as excess fuel consumption and the CO2 caused by rough pavements and pavement deflection. And a note to that, the excess fuel consumption language was removed as a compromise between the legislature, MnDOT, and various concerned industry partners during conference committee. Although we know that the differences in fuel economy between pavement types has been demonstrated in numerous academic research projects. In conclusion, we appreciate the support for this provision to require that MnDOT conduct a common sense life cycle cost analysis. Specific thanks to Chair Hornstein and Representative Cagle for the bill before us today and for the author of last year's bills authored by Representative Heinrich, Cagle, and Kosnick and Senators Kiffmeyer, Howe, and Newman. We're thankful for the bipartisan and bicameral support thus far and urge your further support today. A life cycle cost analysis of road costs is transparent, economically smart, and common sense. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and stand ready for questions.
Thank you, Mr. LeBeau. Mr. Bagnoli.
Mr. Chair, Joe Bagnoli with Winthrop & Weinstein Law Firm on behalf of Concrete Paving Association of Minnesota. I work for Dan. I just wanted to amplify just slightly on that the issue that Representative Kraft discussed and Ms. Breidick with Asphalt Association mentioned one little area, and it's the little area of the inclusion of in this bit of language. It's called accounting for greenhouse gases. Previously, as Mr. LeBeau mentioned, we had a long bit of statutory language that would have suggested how MnDOT look at this based upon academic research that currently exists. Working with the department and asphalt and others and Chair Hornstein, that was reduced to MnDOT shall just account for that. What that is, and Ms. Breidick said it eloquently, generally these sorts of studies look at what the cost to MnDOT is. It does not take into consideration the cost to the user. We are suggesting that different pavement types lead to different costs both to the consumer at the cost of the pump. I think you've all been given this. So there's a financial cost to consumers at the pump. If the road is bumpy, if the road is not as good, and if the road gets bumpy more quickly, that's a cost to the consumer. It's measured incrementally. If you have a bigger truck, if you have a bigger piece of equipment, it's more noticeable than if you don't. And there's a cost to, in terms of a concurrent cost of carbon greenhouse gas. We're suggesting that the research exists, not suggesting, we know the research exists from places that are well-established research institutions in the United States and throughout the world. It's not new research, and that we think we should include that as part of a cost, a life cycle cost, not just to Minnesota, but to the users as well.
Got it. Thank you, Mr. Bagnoli. Any questions for the testifiers? Thank you very much. That was the end of our testifiers who've signed up before. Is there anyone who from the audience who would like to testify for or against the House File 401? All right, seeing none, any questions? Okay. Please state your name for the record and proceed with testimony.
Hey, Mr. Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin, I represent the Minnesota Turf Seed Council, and I didn't prepare remarks today. I just have rebuttal testimony since our little provision was raised by the railroads on line 64. Reader's Digest version on this section. Raw ag products, things you take out of the field. This section was passed in 2008 and allows the growers to buy a permit to haul 90,000 on six axles or 97 on seven. We're already included with the grass seed under 16.4, if you look at that section, ag crops. What the guys do up north is they run it through a mill and screen out the hulls. And the question is that processed or not? So all we're doing on 16.11 is clarifying that the grass seed has been screened. No threat to the railroads at all. So I just wanted to let folks know what the provision was and why it's in here.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Any questions? Thank you, sir. Any further testimony? All right. Any general questions on the bill from Representative Pusberg?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Mr. Chair, for bringing this forward. When you said you were going to be bringing it forward, I thought we had kind of a slam dunk because everything was we thought were kind of agreed to. And I'm kind of surprised at the number of people that I think were in the room and discussing this that now have some issues with that, as even the department had some issues now that I thought wasn't raised last year. Am I correct in that, Mr. Chair?
Chair Hornstein.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pusberg, I share your surprise. having said that, I think it's, you know, important to, you know, hear the arguments and make sure that things are vetted. But you know, generally speaking, I mean, you know, as clunky at times as our process was last year, you know, everything was noticed. There, all of these provisions were discussed in Chair Nelson's committee, and I'm familiar with some of the arguments. But you know, again, I think it's important to take a step back. We have new members here. There may have been some developments since last summer, so we are just having a chance to take a second look. But Representative Pusberg, I do share some of your concerns.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Pusberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I'll be glad to help and work with you on some of these things, too, because I think we're close in all this, and it would be nice to get at least this part out of the way for this year. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, Representative Pusberg, we're completely tracking together on this, and I think this will help us as we move on to some new policy questions this year. You know, we'll have a similar type of bill. It'll probably be even more weighty than this one, so it's good to get this done early. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Perfect. Any final quick questions? Mr. Chair, we've got 2 minutes left here. Seeing none, any final comments? Chair Hornstein.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll, you know, again, be happy to work with everyone in the room on this, and hopefully we can get it going again here in a couple weeks. Mr. Chair, is it okay from my perch here if I make some concluding comments about where
yes,
we're
please.
Headed next week? Well, thank you.
Actually, before you do that, we need to move that House File 401, as we referred.
Yes.
Is that House File 401 be laid over for possible inclusion in a transportation finance and policy bill. So
thank you for
there
reminding
we go.
Us of that detail.
Now, any final comments before
members,
we...
thank you for a good week. And then next week we'll be hearing a number of bills. I believe they are posted or will be posted tomorrow. And, you know, many of them dealing with some issues that we've examined before, reintegration license, things of that nature.
Representative Pusberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I, Chair Hornstein and I have been working on a joint meeting between the Senate and the House and CTS, University of Minnesota out of the Humphrey Institute, Centers for Transportation Studies, And I think you've all gotten information on that, just reminding you about that breakfast starting at 8 next Friday, a week from tomorrow, followed by a presentation. And the reason why it's important, I've been on that committee as a member of their executive committee, and so has Senator Dibble from the Senate. And we do support the Humphrey Institute as well as Center for Transportation Studies, and they are a tool that can be used for research of various aspects. And because of that, I think it's important for this committee to be aware of what they do and what they can be involved with and just kind of see where it's, what's going on. So thank you, Mr. Chair, for getting that arranged.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Any final comments?
Yeah, I want to thank Representative Petersburg for his leadership on this. We were working on this for a while, and he serves in the leadership capacity on CTS. And this is a really – we've done this in the past, members, before the pandemic, and it's a nice chance to, you know, interact with some really knowledgeable people on a variety of transportation issues and for us to, you know, interact a little less formally – you know, as committee members in a different context. So it's always been a great event. I think this, as long as I've been on this committee, we've done this. So it's been a while. And again, I encourage everybody to come next a week from tomorrow. And I thank Representative Petersburg for his involvement in this.
Thank you, Chair Ornstein. Anything else? Nope. With that, we're adjourned.